I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. Our guest this hour is co-author of Aspiring Adults Adrift. He and the other author of this book tracked more than 1,600 students during college and about 1,000 students for 2 years after their 2009 graduation dates. And what they found was a little bit disturbing and a little bit hopeful. They found a third of the graduates in their sample were living at home, and this is about double the number of grads who were living at home in the 1960s. Three-quarters of 18 to 25-year-olds were not living at home but did receive financial assistance from their parents. There weren't too many. About a quarter of this population was making $40,000 a year. Most were making maybe $30,000. And yet they remained hopeful and optimistic about their futures. So why is it that they're not really successful? Is this a matter of course that you don't become successful until you're a little bit older than that? Or is there something happening in college? Are colleges not helping students make transitions that are successful? Are they developing critical thinking, internships, complex reasoning skills, the ability to communicate in writing and in speaking? Are they missing the mark when it comes to helping the graduates with what will make them successful when they become adults? Richard Arum is our guest. He is co-author of Aspiring Adults Adrift. He is a professor of sociology and also education at New York University and director of education research programs at the Social Science Research Council. We, of course, will love to hear from you this hour because I'm sure that many of you are living what we're talking about. Recent college graduate or a family member or friend of somebody who is, what is it that you are living? Do you remain hopeful? Have you been able to find a job? Is it a job that is allowing you to make a living and comfortably so? Are you living at home? Is that okay with you and with your family because eventually you'll get out? We would love to hear from you, and here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, and our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Richard, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen, for making time for this.
Our pleasure. So tell me exactly what you did. You tracked a lot of students during college and quite a few after college. Where did you go? Who did you track?
That's right. We followed students at approximately 24 colleges and universities, very diverse nationally, fairly nationally representative. And we followed them from when they entered college in 2005 through their graduation at four-year institutions in the spring of 2009. They're graduating, remember, during really a rough period in U.S. economic history. And so some of the difficulties they're experiencing in their transitions are associated with the economic context. Some students are doing better than others, and we look for differences in their educational experiences in college to try and make sense of those differences.
Mm-hmm. You do say that there is no question that going to college is important. It pays to go to college, but you say we think the question is, are students getting the value for their time and money that they should be? What are they missing?
Yeah, so, you know, often in popular media, we think the wrong question is being asked. The question is it worth it to go to college? And we know from decades and decades of social science research that it absolutely pays for individuals to attend college, both in terms of the money they spend there as well as the foregone earnings during the time that they're in college. And that's particularly true for low-income students. And so repeatedly in the media asking that question, does it pay to go to college, it's just doing a real disservice to young people today. There is, we think, a tougher question that can be asked of colleges and universities today, and that is, are students getting the value for their money and time invested? And there we think often the case is not, that instead of being challenged to develop academically and prepared for successful transitions to adulthood broadly, colleges and universities are often focused on providing students with social amenities and ensuring that they're satisfied by entertaining them in college and university and not really challenging them academically or preparing them well for the future.
You cite, and I find this extraordinary, I went to college a long time ago, but we had to study. I remember, maybe I did it a little bit last minute too often, but you write that for many students, a typical experience is they studied alone a little more than an hour a day, and for that effort, which really isn't very much when your job is to be going to school, they received high grades.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the average student in a four-year college and university studies alone 8 hours per week, a little bit more than an hour a day. 36% of the students in our study reported that they studied alone less than 5 hours per week.
Goodness gracious.
Less than an hour a day. We had their transcripts, and they had a 3.22 GPA. That is a B+, a grade point average. And the reason why that's the case is that in many of the classes, they were not asked to write significantly, to read, and the standards were so low because, again, the institutions aren't focusing on pushing students academically. Often they're focused on all the other aspects of attracting 18-year-olds to campus and keeping them satisfied.
The other part that seems to me to be extremely important is that there has to be a way to help students prepare the way for leaving college, that internships, I think, are really valuable for college students. Any kinds of programs that can match what you're doing, what you're learning in college with what's going on in your chosen field are valuable, and I wonder how many of those take place and in what special areas are they taking place successfully?
Yeah, so in our work, we did indeed identify that internships, apprenticeships, the use of school job placement services, all those things helped smooth labor market transitions that students were experiencing. In addition, we found that general skills, higher order skills like critical thinking and complex reasoning and the ability to communicate in writing, those skills also tracked with early labor market success. But I want to make a point right in the beginning here that when we talk about transitions to adulthood, we're talking not just about the workforce, but transitions to in terms of adulthood more broadly, in terms of citizenship. And the like. And so we need our higher ed institutions to prepare students for the workforce, but we also need them to prepare students to exercise democratic citizenship in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that too is where we see, again, huge gaps and disappointments. Let me give you a few examples.
Sure.
We ask students 2 years after graduating how often they read the newspaper in print or online. And 36% of these college graduates said that they read the newspaper in print or online monthly or never.
Oh, my gosh.
39% said they talk about politics or public affairs to friends, family members, coworkers, monthly or never. So they are... many of them have left college without understanding that one of their responsibilities to themselves and to society is to be civically engaged.
Well, I can't imagine being in a family or being with anybody not talking about politics or public affairs. We're exceptional because of what we do, but what in the world are they talking about if they're or what are they reading if they're reading, if they're not reading a monthly or a newspaper every day or looking online at what's going on in the world? What are you doing instead?
Well, again, I think they're doing everything else because they've come to believe that it's enough to be entertained and to simply focus on entertainment and their satisfaction, and I mean that's what the schools have communicated to them implicitly by what they've invested in and what they haven't invested in. And so the investment in social amenities and new student centers, dorms, athletic facilities, and the like, and the disinvestment in faculty and the number of full-time faculty are in sharp decline in the higher education systems, and academic standards as well, and hour studying as well. And so students have walked away from these institutions, again, without an appreciation of what it means to be an educated citizen today.
What you're saying is very alarming, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a real challenge to our society moving forward, and again, not simply in terms of our economic competitiveness, but rather our ability to exercise self-governance and for our democracy to work and be effective.
And it's I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, like you know, and I'm happy to be talking to an audience in Wisconsin about this because you know the Wisconsin idea from the start around higher education was to prepare students broadly, not just for the labor market, but for you know, and here the language is very clear in terms of a sense of purpose in life, and again. That is absent and missing in our higher education system today.
Well, it was almost absent from ours as well, but that's another story. In terms of colleges, the colleges must be perpetuating this kind of problem, though, because they're building the fancy unions and the swimming pools and the great athletic facilities and not investing in educators. Why are they perpetuating the very problem that we're talking about?
Well, because they're all in this larger competitive system where they're desperate to attract 17-year-olds as consumers and clients. So we've moved in this country from a system where institutions received grants to educate students to empowering students, again, often 17-year-olds, when they're deciding which college to attend, we empowered them with public funds to exercise choice over which institutions they attend. And so we've incentivized colleges and universities focusing on satisfying student consumer needs. And again, it's not all 17-year-olds or even a majority of them that when they're making these choices focus on things like academically challenging environments when they're making decisions.
I would imagine there's a difference between those who come from middle, upper middle, and upper income families and those whose families don't make that much money. Because how can you be making a consumer need choice when you're a consumer who doesn't have very much money?
Yeah, I think there are definitely class differences in this, also in terms of what the choice set is that the 17-year-old is imagining.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's welcome phone calls. We have yet to get into the areas of how many are living at home, how many continue to need financial support from parents once they've graduated from school, how many are able to find their way successfully into the world of work. If there are certain kinds of occupations where colleges prepare people better than other occupations, well, we have a full bank of phone lines right now, so just keep the number in your head. And we'll get to you in a minute. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, Richard Arum, professor of sociology and education at NYU and author of Aspiring Adults Adrift, Tentative Transitions of College Graduates. Let's go to our first of many calls, Jerry in Janesville. Hi.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hi, Jerry.
I'm in my late 20s. I live at home, but I'm moving to Milwaukee in a little bit to begin a job. But that job is only going to pay me $12 an hour. I have a degree in English, which I know wasn't the wisest economic decision. But I got a lot of pressure to go to college. Like it wasn't an option not to, which is a very lucky upbringing to have. But I was passionate about literature and the written word, and I learned a lot, and I'm happy with my degree. But it didn't do much for me economically, obviously. So I went and got a paralegal certificate. The job I have now is not in that field at all. I tried and couldn't land anything. So I just kind of had to take this job out of desperation. And frankly, it's insulting, to get paid that little. I was making that much doing landscaping, but, I don't really have a choice. I think that there's too many people in college.
Are you optimistic that you'll be able to find something that's more to your liking, Jerry, down the road? Do you think of this as temporary?
Yeah, I am optimistic. But as far as, college is not preparing people for or not educating them properly, I can think of at least a half a dozen times in my 5 years of school that these students would complain that the teacher was too difficult or the work was too demanding, all this stuff. And I liked those professors the best because that's where I learned the most. That's where you get your money's worth. Shout out to Raymond Spoto, Spanish teacher at UW-Platteville, very difficult teacher. But he taught me so much.
Mm. Professor Arum, what do you say to Jerry?
Well, it very much resonates with our study. The cohort of students in our study are now around 27, and Jerry sounds with a year or two off from that. And he unfortunately came of age during this very difficult economic period, and the consequences of that, those early difficulties throughout his life course, are real and lasting. Often, we know from prior research. He is likely better off than had he not gone to college, even though he's facing these difficulties. So too are students that ended their education in high school. They're facing even greater difficulties today. So the story's not over for Jerry, and that's, he is optimistic about his future, just like 95% of the students in our study were, that said their lives would be the same or better than their parents, even though, again, a quarter of them were living back at home with their parents and 75% were receiving financial assistance. They assumed their life would be better, expected their lives to be better, the same or better than their parents.
Was that wildly optimistic on their part? Do they have reason for such optimism?
Well, That time will tell. I think the 95% figure is probably overly optimistic. We see a very divergent pattern in our research from students who did not go to college in the last decade and a half. Young adults who did not go to college are increasingly despairing about their future. And again, young adults who have attended college are as optimistic as ever, if not, they're slightly more optimistic. And so there is this divergence in the country for young adults that attended college or not. And again, time will tell what the 30s and 40s are like for young right. adults like Jerry.
Best of luck to you, Jerry, and thanks for calling. Dave in Schulzburg. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for the call, Kathleen. As a parent of three UW Platteville students, two graduates, $30,000 in debt apiece, and the sliver of the segment that your guest is speaking about, two of them still financial aid from mom and dad, all three employed. The biggest thing that needs to be pounded into the parents, just like myself, who are still assisting, who really wanted their parents to go to college, our legislators set up a financial aid program where they take the money at 0% from our taxes, the federal land bank, and then charge our children 6%. This must be stated every single time a guest comes on, pro or con, if they're going to talk about the cost of education or who, whatever the topic may be, if the phrase cost comes up, the host or that guest must say, oh, by the way, why these parents vote for incumbents? Because it could be changed in about 5 minutes of legislation. But they won't because they're making money off of our children. That is wrong, and it must be stated in every public radio program ever devoted to this topic or Wisconsin program. Thank you so much. Good program.
Thanks, Dave. Professor Arum.
Well, I'll say something a little broader about cost. The cost of higher education in the U.S. is twice per student what the cost is in Europe.
Ooh.
We have a very, very expensive model, and that's setting aside your caller's concern about the structure of the financing system. The cost per student is twice what it is in Europe, and that is because we have this model which is highly dependent on residency of students, right? That the students go, they're not just going to college, they're often going away to college. And that's true not just in flagship public universities and private universities, but often also in the regional colleges, that they're increasingly living on campus or around campus, and social amenities and student support services are built into the model. And that's a very, very expensive model. It's not widely found in Europe. And there's reasonable questions about, is that the most appropriate model going forward? Can we sustain it in the same way that we have in the past for increasing numbers of students who we want to attend higher education? Now, those are difficult conversations
yes.
to have, but those are conversations I think we must have as we want more students to attend college. Where are we going to find the resources to make that possible? And is it the most appropriate use of those funds to spend funding again on the social amenities and the student support services rather than on the core functions of the schools, the academic program?
Mm-hmm. Good questions. Joan in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Joan.
I'd like to know if Professor Arum has come across any methods or statistics of colleges that are the exemption to the rule that he was talking about at the beginning with the examples that were absolutely frightening. Has he come across any methods that have surpassed those poor?
Yeah, so I'll say two things there. So we did find variation across colleges and universities in their ability to in their ability to challenge students and to demonstrate gains in student learning, in this measure that we used in as students entered college and then when they left, the measure of higher order critical thinking and complex reasoning and writing. There are differences across colleges in their ability to impart those skills. However, and I think this is even more important, we found greater variation within each college than across colleges and universities. That is, we found in every college we were conducting research in, students that were applying themselves, taking challenging courses, developing significantly in terms of these competencies we were measuring, and then flourishing as young adults. And so the caller is right to ask which colleges do better than others, and I'm going to punt on that, I'm providing specifics there. But an even more important question for parents that are sending their children to college is what are the experiences the students are taking advantage of? How are they experiencing college and university? Are they applying themselves? Are they taking demanding courses or not? Because in every college and university today, there's now social media out there where the students, if they want, can pick paths through college, courses and majors and professors that require very little of them. And so, again, focusing not just on the variation across colleges, but within colleges, we think is important.
Well, let's talk about, because I'm thinking still about Jerry, who called earlier, who had the English major and just couldn't find work. There are, as you say in your book, that there are some programs within some colleges, like business majors, often make extensive use of apprenticeships, internships, job placement programs. Is part of the problem that if you want to go to college and study English, I think it's terrific, and if you love literature and you want to read widely, but what you do with a degree in English, a lot of people have been reading and they have been thinking about, what am I going to do when I get out of school with this degree? Is it the college placement department that needs to get people thinking about what you can do with all of your study, or are we begging the question here that college needs to be in some way more about preparing people for jobs, and if there aren't any jobs for English majors, then you better think about something else?
Well, you know, we think it has to be both. So let's think of two types of programs, a business program and a English major, a liberal arts program.
Yes.
And so what we found, you find a very complex pattern in the data. Students tend to be more challenged academically in the arts and science core of the university. In majors like English, they tend to read more, they tend to write more, they tend to develop more in these general skills we measure. They also tend to go to graduate school more often than in business programs. Business programs tend to have a very weak and limited academic demands in their courses in terms of reading and writing and in terms of hours students spend studying. Nevertheless, the students in those programs take advantage of internships and apprenticeships and school job placement services and do very well in the labor market after graduating. Well, so from those two different programs and the characteristics identified there, what about the possibility of each of those programs borrowing the positives from the other.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't an English major be asked to do an apprenticeship and an internship in something occupationally related to English?
Why
There's
not?
Certainly many applications. And, you know, why is it that that doesn't happen very often in the arts and science corps, and it happens only in these professional programs? And then, of course, of the professional programs, the question is, why aren't the students being asked to read and write and apply themselves academically, so they're developing these general competencies which are going to serve them not just in the narrow job they're being prepared for, but throughout their adult lives as they move from job to job and industry to industry, and you know, they're so that they're prepared to broadly for their economic future as well as their political, civic, and futures more broadly.
Thanks, Joan, for your call. Let's go to Tina in Madison. Hi, Tina.
Hi. I just want to say, first of all, I totally agree with what your guest just said. I think that makes a lot of sense to combine the professional schools with arts and sciences. I just wanted to give the example of one of my sons graduated 3 years ago from Beloit College, and he and many of his friends did sort of the traditional liberal arts things, and they've all done really, really well, and I think it's because they learned how to think and they learned how to write, and they can really kind of think on their feet. You know, you start thinking about preparing people only for jobs, those jobs aren't even going to exist 15, 20 years down the road. We don't know what we're preparing people for, so I think I would really encourage the liberal arts mindset, but maybe with sometimes that practical aspect that your guest talks about. Great program, and thank you so much.
Oh, Tina, before you go, oh, Tina's gone. I just wanted to find out what field her sons went into.
Yeah, I think another way to think about it, to talk about it, is that there's been very little intentionality in designing the curriculum and student experiences, and so students are kind of left on their own to pick courses, pick programs, pick educational experiences that are going to serve them well in preparing them for the future. And so, to me, you know, the problem isn't the English major per se. The problem is that the student I called earlier was likely given very little guidance in what courses and within the major as well as outside the major would be useful in preparing and developing them for adulthood.
Let's go next to Earl in Medford. Hello.
Hey, great show. I can share my background. I was going to Marquette in the 1960s in journalism, and you know, journalism has changed so much. But the philosophy and the rigorous thinking stayed with me all the time. And later on, I went and got a master's in city planning and worked on that. So you need the basis, the foundation of rigorous intellectual philosophy and the like. And you can learn the other intricacies of it.
And what area did you go into for work, Earl?
I did journalism, newspaper work, and then into radio, public radio. So.
All right. Can't ask for anything more than that, right?
No. Great.
Professor?
Yeah, I completely agree with the caller. You know, it is that training in these general dispositions and competencies that are going to really serve as the foundation for future labor market success as well as success more broadly as adults.
Thank you, Earl, so much for your call. We have some lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. Our guest is the co-author of Aspiring Adults Adrift, Tentative Transitions of College Graduates, Professor Richard Aaron. And his co-author followed a number of students. They followed 1,600 college students back in 2009, and then they looked at a smaller number, but still over 1,000, 2 years after they had graduated, to find out how many were living on their own, how many were happy with what they were doing, how many went home to live with their parents, how many were receiving financial aid from their parents, how optimistic they were about their futures. The book also looks at what it is that college may be doing that might be wrong, a little bit off track, building fancy unions, building fancy athletic facilities instead of investing in really top-notch professors and rigorous academic study for people who will then become critical thinkers and better prepared to enter the labor force. What do you think? What's been your experience? Welcoming your phone calls, 800-486-8655 is the number. The email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We continue our phone calls now for Professor Richard Arum. He's a professor of sociology and education at NYU, director of education research programs at the Social Science Research Council. Nathaniel in Marshfield, hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right, Nathaniel.
All right. I have a question, but I have also a point of view. I remember back, and this is my point of view I'm going to make, and then I have a question after. I remember back in the 80s, there were engineers that were coming out of different types of colleges around the country with all different types of development for major cities across the country in America. Now, I know a lot of people, and probably a lot of young people don't know anything about that, but I remember them because they were on some of those, mechanic popular books when they were showing how they were going to redesign at a city like Atlanta or major cities like Detroit, but they never got the funding from the government to do it. And I think with the gentleman that's the host today, or the guy, I forgot his name, sorry about that, what he was saying earlier about the financing, I think the revenue service, the Federal Revenue Service, even though it's not directly but sort of indirectly involved with a lot of the institutions and universities across our countries and even community colleges, is part of our problem with how we're designing how the development of our country is heading, you know. And now the old school engineers that were drafting and with all the different type of sciences that were coming out back in the 80s, never got any funding. So they just, you know, I think many of them just, you know, hid in the corner and just worked for the government quietly. So, because none of their ideas were ever funded.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a part of the condition over a long span of years, the reason why our educational system for our current students, and even maybe, you know, in the last 15 years, when they come in and out of colleges, whether it's the communities, colleges, or different types of further educational type of schools, which the reason why it's not paying off enough is because the redevelopment and refunding for major cities, whether it's no matter what part of the country it is, haven't been funded.
Professor Arum.
Well, you know, I think this caller and the one earlier that brought into question the financing system around higher education, they both point to the complexities of the political system that we're currently facing. Given those complexities, we need our schools to produce in young adults higher order skills, critical thinking, and complex reasoning, so they can make sense of the challenges we're facing as a country, politically, economically, environmentally. The problems are not easy and simple. They're complex. And so we need to develop in young people, young adults, the capacity to think through these problems. Our democratic system depends on it.
And we also need to instill in these in young adults a responsibility for engaging in these types of questions, for keeping up with the news and discussing policy and public affairs. And again, I find that the most troubling finding in our work is the extent to which students weren't simply not developing these competencies to be able to do this form of political engagement, but they also hadn't developed the attitudes and dispositions towards exercising democratic citizenship as young adults.
Thanks, Nathaniel. Joe in Appleton, hi.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Joe.
Yes, I haven't seen the study, but I have a theory. If you dug into the study, it is divided into two groups. If you look at the majors that have specific skills like nursing, engineering, accounting, those students became very successful right off the bat and had employers fighting for them. And then the other students that the address students are probably the ones with general majors, like the English major, history major. They are probably confused as to what their skills are, and the employers are also confused as to where to slot them in. And so maybe this all comes down to what major you're in.
What do you think of that, Professor?
Well, I mean, again, that is part of it, is the extent to which the majors are occupationally focused. That does explain some of the early labor market outcomes. However, our work identifies a broader set of problems, and that is that large numbers of students are not being challenged academically and preparing themselves in terms of general competencies to be successful in any of these positions. And so if you pick a major that's occupationally focused, but you're studying alone less than an hour a day for it, and you're not being asked, 50% of the students in our study said in a typical semester they didn't have a single class that asked them to write 20 pages over the course of the semester, and a third said they didn't have a single class that asked them to read more than 40 pages per week. And so with that limited academic rigor that they're being exposed to, even if they're in a major that lands them a job right out of college, it would be naive to believe that they are being well prepared for a successful future as adults with that level of academic preparation.
How do you find out how academically rigorous a college is?
Well, so one way to do it is to ask the students about their educational experiences. And so we surveyed them at multiple times during their careers and asked them about their coursework. Were they being asked to write? Were they being in classes that asked them to read more than 40 pages per week? How many hours of studying they did? Did faculty have high expectations for students? And so on. And so you can, with questions like that, you can see how students are understanding and experiencing their college education and how that varies across majors, across programs, across types of institutions, and so on, as well as how those experiences track with greater or lesser gains on a measure of student performance. The one that we used was the Collegiate Learning Assessment that we gave to students, again, at multiple points of time. And students that were challenged more, they reported greater academic challenge and academic rigor and greater student effort. Their gains were higher on this measure of their general performance.
Thanks, Joe. Vicki in Madison. Hi. Vicki.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to this, and I could have so many comments about this. I think a lot of kids that go into college now don't really know what they want to do and sometimes come out of college thinking that they're going to hit it big. And I think that they don't go through the growing process of figuring out the things that they don't like to do so that they can really figure out what they do want to do. And I can't tell you, my three kids have graduated from college. I'll graduate next year.
Oh, great.
I'm graduating in May. I have had more practical experience in my classes. I go to UW-Stout, and I've had more practical experience in my classes than both of my boys had in their classes. One went to Eau Claire and one went to Platteville. My daughter's had a lot of practical experience in her classes, more so than the boys did. So I think that that's one thing that's really important. My major is professional communication and emerging media, so not only do I get the English part of it, but I get a lot of what's really going on in the world today. One of the important things I think that we need to touch on, too, is the networking that you develop during college, because I've always told my kids that when you go to college, basically their whole job is to teach you how to think, you know, and you might not ever get a job in the major that in what you majored in, but it should teach you how to think, and the networking is so important, because most of the jobs that people get today, they get basically because of who they know as much as or even more so than what they know. So I think those are all really important elements.
What do you think, Professor Arum?
Well, I agree with two out of the three things that Vicki said.
Okay.
The importance of practical experiences we also found in our study. Agree fully with this idea that teaching individuals how to think is central to the purpose of higher education. The one I would disagree with is the network piece. And we found widespread student belief that, again, like the caller said, it's not what you know, it's who you know. These social networks are going to matter for you. Students very much believe that. However, when we attempted to identify to what extent early labor market outcomes were associated with social networks in college, how often students got jobs from friends and family, and we found that that was a very small and insignificant way that students got early jobs. About 10 to 12% of jobs were found that in those ways. And those jobs had significantly worse conditions associated with them than jobs found through other means. And so at least in terms of the early labor market outcomes, your friends you know in college don't help, because they're often struggling, and in the jobs they can help you get are ones, serving coffee at the local coffee stand. Now, it is possible that 10, 20 years down the road, those social networks might help, but we found no evidence, in fact, negative evidence, that in terms of the social networks helping in terms of early labor market.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's go to Dawn and Sharon. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? We have about a minute left.
I'm very good. So I'm a professor of international business and marketing, and I have been for 15 years, been to 27 countries. I strongly disagree with your guest. We require great, great deal of writing and reading in all of our business courses. We require many liberal arts courses because we realize that their communication skills, they will not get jobs without that, without good writing skills, without good speaking skills. So we found that some of the research that he is quoting, the students didn't perceive reading articles or reading electronic media as qualified when those questions were asked for 20 pages a week. So we found that we had to be more specific about how we asked the questions, because if they weren't holding a traditional textbook, they weren't really perceiving it as reading, even though they were reading journals.
I need to hold you there. We have about 10 seconds for a response, Professor Arum.
Well, the business students in our study said they studied fewer hours than any of the other students in our study. The business students also did better in the early labor market outcomes. I'm just reporting the data as it existed.
And on that, we must say goodbye. Thank you so much. Richard Arum, professor of sociology and education at NYU, author of Aspiring Adults Adrift. Thanks to KP Whaley and Scotty Myers for producing the show.